Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home with a $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. The NFL draft is tonight. We know what the Titans are doing at number one overall, but should be a very fascinating NFL draft tonight. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, we know Cam Ward's going one to the Titans tonight. Where does this draft start for you, and what's the most intriguing storyline for you heading into this tonight?
That's a good question. I think we get to four before it's pretty much chalk. I think 1, 2, and 3. We've been here for a while, but I think Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, really 1, 2, 3 make most sense to me. It's frustrating because I feel like, you know, you sit down and really yesterday when you're trying to sort through the last couple of days and you sit there and you say, okay, we've been here for how long at this stage, and we get to 1, 2, and 3 and it feels like what it was weeks ago, if not, you know, really where we started in terms of who the elite prospects were in this draft and where they were going to come off in the board. And realistically, I really think when you get to New England at number four and Will Campbell, that's sort of the wonky pick at this point where you're like, all right, it's not the perfect fit. It's not the perfect player. Should there be a trade at this point? Ashton Gentry, I think, is kind of getting there's been interesting stuff that I think has kind of happened in the last 24, 48, 72 hours with Ashton Gentry. So, but I think the top three picks, that's really kind of the chalk of this draft. And then once we get to the Patriots at number four, that's when maybe the draft really begins for everybody, even though I think that, you know, Will Campbell ultimately really, if you want to talk about what is the Mike Vrabel pick in this draft, it's ultimately going to be Will Campbell at number four. But there's space there. I think there's wiggle there for things to happen ultimately at number four.
Okay, so you tease the Ashton Gentry thing. He is fascinating to me because I could Vrabel is, Vrabel loves having a great running back, so that would be right. One curveball right there. What else do you think might happen there?
I think it's not just Vrabel, you know, wanting to have a great running back, but also when you look at the Patriots, it's like, okay, is Will Campbell, is he a natural offensive tackle? No. I mean, the measurables, the wingspan, the arm length, when you really look at the analytics of it, you're like, well, he doesn't really fit the classic offensive tackle mode. He looks like a guy that ultimately could slide inside. He could be a guard. Do you take a guard at four? And then you ask yourselves, okay, the Patriots, are they good enough to just say, well, we have to get an offensive lineman? Or the Patriots, you know, from a talent perspective, do you just go get the most special player still available at four? And that's the thing, is that Gentry, if he was not a running back, if he was anything else, you would say, absolutely, that's the fourth overall pick in this draft. But because he's a running back, I think there's still this push historically to push him down the board because of the fact that he's a running back. But when you talk about just special players, period, let's just talk about special players in this draft, he's probably the third best player, right? I mean, or he's in the top three. When you talk about Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, Ashton Gentry are typically the three guys where teams talk about special prospects. He's one of those guys. So I think that's what sort of continues to force him at the fourth pick, where if we're sitting here in a few hours and the Patriots take Gentry at four, we're going, okay, well, he's special. He's a unicorn. It's high to take a running back, but we get it. We look at the roster. We understand why he would go at four. Plus, on top of that, the Jacksonville Jaguars, I personally believe, and you know, over the last 48 hours, a number of NFL teams in the top 10 believe that the Jaguars are going an offensive skill position player at five. So Genty is a player that a lot of other teams are pointing at five. So if he can go five, he can go four. So that, to me, is really why the draft starts at four. Because, of course, do the Patriots need an offensive tackle? Yes. Is there an easy fit there? You know, it depends how you feel about the measurables and Will Campbell. But if Genty ends up going four, it'll be surprising. But I also think that's the pick where we go, okay, the draft can take a left turn. And you, there's some argument there to be had because of the need for the Patriots just to have an impact player for.
So, Charles, I want to stick with running back for a second because Rexrode falls in love with one player in the draft every year, and this year it's Cam Scataboo out of Arizona State. And I read your piece from Yahoo Sports about how maybe the vibe on Cam Scataboo not great heading into this draft. What are you
dumb
hearing there?
Dumb people in this league. Dumb people in this league.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was really surprised. First off, doing the All-Juice team, he got so many votes for the All-Juice team. I thought to myself, I was like, maybe this is a guy who, okay, maybe he's an end of the second round type of player for NFL teams. But then when I sat down, I'm like, all right, I gotta do positional stacks. Let me go through this. And I talked to evaluators from 10 different teams. I was stunned by kind of the negativity just in terms of where he sort of fit in the stack for most NFL teams. And, you know, it was like fourth round. It was, you know, fourth round, mid fourth, some had him early fifth. And it shocked me because I had talked myself into, sort of at the end of the All-Juice process, I thought, wow, maybe he's a second round pick. Maybe he's a guy that, you know, there's a team that really likes him enough to get him into maybe the mid second round of this draft. But I don't know if it was, I think part of it is the speed. Like, teams really can't talk themselves into where he fits from a speed perspective. But yeah, that was a shocker. It didn't line up. I at the end of the All-Juice team, I remember I was sitting there with Charles McDonald and we were like, okay, he's got to be on the team. Where does he fit in terms of, like, because we draft the team by sort of area of the draft. I was like, you know, can we get away with taking him in the end of the third? And I thought that was touchy. I was like, I don't think he's going to go in the end of the third. I think he's going to go, you know, somewhere in the second, maybe early in the third. But then when I sat there and I said, okay, positional stack, and I walked through it with every single team that I talked to that was really willing to help me out in terms of stacking the position at running back, all of them were like fourth round, and if not later. And I think it really shocked me at that point to kind of see where he was fitting in the running back stack. I still, in my mind, I still think, you know, there's just no way this is a guy that lasts until the fourth round or God forbid the fifth round. He's just too useful, I think, as a player. And I think some team is going to sit there and go, look, I don't care if he runs a 4.8. You know, he doesn't play as a 4.8 running back in terms of his speed. You know, he's not a 4.8, 40-yard dash kind of guy. And there have definitely been a few people I've talked to who have said, you know, they just can't see him sitting around forever because of the multitude of things that he can do when he's ultimately on the field. But yeah, I mean, it really, really shocked me. I think of all the, when I sat there and I did the stacks of every, particularly the offensive skill positions, that was the one guy that I couldn't get over. He and Milrow. I mean, a lot of people were like, yeah, could Milrow go at the end of the first? Sure. But we really have him middle of the second, early third. It was like Jalen Milrow and Cam Scataboo were the two that I really couldn't get over. Just the disparity between how much teams like to watch his film to where they really had him stacked on the board.
So do you follow Joe Shane's son on Instagram, Charles?
I don't, but is he the one who, when you watched the, what was it, the Hard Knocks, offseason, was he the one who was like, we should take Jane Daniels?
You should probably take Jane Daniels, Dad.
Yeah.
This kid's smart.
In my mind, that's always what I remember about him, is that I'm like, man, he's a really good value. He probably called that draft the best in 2024.
So what I want to know is if he has this Jackson Dart highlight tape that he puts together, shares it, then, like, deletes it. Does that mean he knows something or that he just wants his dad to do that? And by the way, you think it's like they're going Abdul-Carter. That means that they must be planning to move back into the first, late in the first type thing?
Yeah. They're not taking a quarterback at third. Like, there's just no way at this point. Like, again, I told you, I think the top of the draft is chalk when we talk about, you know, first, second, third. It's going to be Ward. It's going to be Hunter. It's going to be Abdul-Carter, number three. I think the one interesting thing was when I sat there and I said, where does this draft start? Initially, earlier in the week, I felt like the Giants were a much more iffy pick when it came to Abdul-Carter, because I was like, all right, when I talked to other teams, when they talked about Carter, I mean, he's not as clean as an evaluation as we've talked about throughout the process. There's a foot, you know, potential for a foot injury in the future. There's a potential for a shoulder injury in the future. He didn't work out. He didn't do private workouts. His sort of body makeup, it's like, you know, can he add enough weight to ensure that he's not just this speed player who doesn't, you know, accrue injuries over the course of the year? One thing that really stuck in my mind was, you know, a year ago, I had teams that kind of described Ricky Pearsall as this, you know, race car body type. Like, you know, you look at it and you think as an athletic profile, you like it, but then you're like, is he going to be injured a lot because of sort of just the body type he brings to the table? You know, Abdul-Carter fell into that category this year going into the assessment. So, you know, I thought in my mind, I'm like, where does the draft start? I'm like, maybe it starts at three. You know, they have Kayvon Thibodeau. They have Brian Burns. Maybe a team trades to three ultimately. But I think really what crystallized in my mind in the last day or so at three was he's the best player of the board. Once you get beyond the top, you know, three players, Cam Ward, and you can throw Genty in there, Cam Ward, Travis Hunter, Abdul-Carter, Ashton Genty, there's this massive talent shelf fall off. And they're not going to screw around with that. They're not going to move out of three to go play around at some other position because they're not going to take Genty. And so three is definitely going to be Abdul-Carter. But they've done so much homework on Shedeur Sanders. And I've been so locked on all this work they've done on Shedeur Sanders. And I've actually had a couple other teams in the quarterback market say, look, it's not just Shedeur. They've done a lot of homework on the quarterbacks in general. And especially Jackson Dart is another guy up there where they've done a comparable amount of work beyond Shedeur also on Jackson Dart. So I had spent, I think, the expanse of more than a week saying, look, if they're going to trade up at the end of the first round, they're going to come up and they're going to get Shedeur Sanders. They've followed this guy around all season long. You know, this is really where they pushed a bulk of their work. They've had meetings with him personally, I think, to even out some of the thought process internally about what his character was like. Maybe, you know, maybe it wasn't always the best when they met with him. And then I had other teams say, look, you're concentrating so much on Shedeur. I'd put Jackson Dart in that same category. They've done the same amount of work. And this is other teams that have done work on Dart saying, look, the Giants have done a ton of work on Dart as much as they've done on Shedeur. I don't think I really fully absorbed that. And probably in the last 24 hours, that's one of the things that I think changed for me, is I was like, okay, if they trade back into the first round, it's a Shedeur kind of move. And I've had a few other teams convince me that it's not a Shedeur move. It could potentially be a Jackson Dart move. It's one of those two, ultimately, if they move into the tail end of the first round. And I've seen some reports that And I think they're slightly overblown, but I've seen some reports that Brian Daboll maybe did not necessarily have the favorable connection with Shedeur Sanders and some of their private meetings that everybody thinks they have. I personally think that's, you know, slightly overcooked at this point. I approach that with skepticism. That feels like a piece of information that if the Giants want to move up in the end of the first round, one of those things that I think you try to get out there late is, maybe we don't like Shedeur so much. Maybe Brian Daboll didn't have the greatest personal meetings with him. I'm like, wow, that really came out very, very late in the process, and it feels like you're sort of trying to throw people off. But what I do think is probably accurate is it's a Shedeur or Jackson Dart move up for the Giants at the end of the first round, and it'll be really, really interesting to me at the end of today to sort of see what happens in picks, you know, 26, 27 to 32. That's where the Giants, I feel like, try to go and get their quarterback.
So, Charles, Mike Borgonzi, Chad Brinker spoke earlier this week and said, you know, don't bother calling us anymore. We know what we're doing at number one. Everybody knows it's going to be Cam Ward. What do you make of the process to get to this point for the Titans, and now that the day is here, the situation that Cam Ward is walking into here in Nashville?
I truly believe it was open in terms of the pick. I feel like it was open into, at the very least, mid-March. You know, it's when you talk to people inside Cam Ward's camp, like, it was, there was no doubt into mid-March. Their thought process was, oh, the Giants are going to be really aggressive here. They're going to come up and they're going to get Cam. He's going to be the number one overall pick, but he's going to ultimately end up playing for the New York Giants. I think Cam Ward believed that into mid-March, that, look, I'm going to be the number one overall pick. I'm going to end up playing for the Giants. Like, this trade is ultimately going to get worked out. And I think the reason why they believed that was whatever, you know, lines of communication that were open between the Giants and Cam Ward's camp led Cam Ward to believe they're definitely going to trade up and they're going after him at number one overall. But I think ultimately what happened over the course of the process was I felt like he had a very, very clean process. I thought everything I heard was the interviews were great. You know, from a leadership standpoint, he showcased a lot in personal meetings to suggest that, yeah, he's absolutely what you want at quarterback in terms of leading your team. I think the, you know, the pro day, the private workouts, I kind of think like he hit everything. It was like he didn't really have this period where something popped up and you're like, oh, there's this character issue, or, you know, from a physical standpoint, there were certain limitations. I don't think that ever really occurred. So I think if you talk about Cam Ward and you go, why is he number one overall pick? I think his process was about as clean as it could be. And the Tennessee Titans got to the point where it was like I knew by late February, early March, they were out on Levis. They did not want to start Will Levis at quarterback. And if it wasn't going to be in free agency, if it wasn't going to be via trade, they were getting another quarterback in there who was their long-term starter, you know, with a horizon, you know, a decade out. That had to me, that had to be a drafted quarterback. And if it wasn't going to be Cam Ward, it didn't make sense. A lot of other players who ultimately were going to be available to them. So I just think it was the fact that, you know, there's a lot of box checking that happens with quarterbacks along the way. And I think he really accomplished that. And one of the things that always sticks out to me, we talked about this early. I mean, probably a month ago, we talked about this. If you're drafting a quarterback, you have to sit there and say, this is a guy I want to compete with all these other AFC quarterbacks. Who has the ceiling out there right now? And there, if you want to, you know, not Cam Ward and say there's too much off schedule stuff, or, you know, maybe his size isn't perfect, or this, that, and the other, he has the ceiling beyond, I think, other than maybe Jalen Milroe, but Milroe is such a body of work where it's like, you know, it's going to take years. If he's going to meet the potential he has, it's going to be a multitude of years. other than that guy, I think Cam Ward is the one who walks in and has the ceiling that allows you to think in terms of planning, we can compete with these other AFC quarterbacks that ultimately he's going to have to compete with. I don't know if there's anybody else out there that could ultimately accomplish that, especially in a short period of time. Maybe you can argue it with Milroe. That's fine. But I think Milroe is a projection out to, you know, 2027, 2028. Cam Ward is somebody who, personally, I believe, given what he's done at Incarnate Word, what he's done at Washington State, what he's done at Miami, he's shown he can walk into a program and immediately take that next step in development. And I think that's what a lot of teams really ultimately believe about him.
Couple quick ones from the text line for you, Charles, driven by WilsonCountyHighway.com. People asking about Pierce and Mike Green possibly falling to the second. It seems to me like Pierce might project as a second rounder. James Pierce, we're talking, talk about his stuff. Mike Green seems like a lock first rounder. Also, someone's asking Matthew Nashville about a blockbuster trade, Jerry Jones says in the works, and could George Pickens be part of it?
Okay, Green, I think I'd be shocked if he fell out of the first round. Pierce, he's fringy. There are definitely some teams that do not like him. I'd be lying if I said the word knucklehead never came up with James Pierce. And I mentioned that because, you know, like Pierce to me, it was interesting like a year ago when I asked, I always ask like a year out. It's usually I'm at the combine in 2024. I'm asking like, okay, we're talking about the 2024 draft, but tell me about the 2025 draft. If I'm at the combine in 2025, I'm asking about the next year. Like Pierce was a guy that I remember literally sitting there in like February of 2024 at the combine and, you know, a full year out from the 2025 draft, more than a full year out. And I said, you know, let's project this a year out, like, 14 months from now, who's potentially the top pick in the 2025 NFL draft? And I had teams who were like, you know, watch James Pierce at Tennessee. And, you know, I feel like it kind of diminished ultimately what happened at the end there for him at Tennessee. I still think though, the talent, he's a fringe, you know, ultimately first round pick in this draft. I would not be surprised though to see him slip into the second. I think there was a little more disappointment at how things ended for him. And then who else were we talking about?
This blockbuster trade, George Pickens. Cowboys fans want George Pickens.
Okay, so
can they dream?
Here's the blockbuster trade problem. And so when Jerry Jones comes out and he says, hey, we're working on two substantive trades here, my thought process was, and I think a number of NFL teams too, once you really started texting, it was funny because it started almost immediately after you had that press conference and he's saying, we're working on two substantial trades in this draft. I think people were like, are they going after Patrick Ramsey? Are they going after Patrick Ramsey again, dating myself here. Obviously Ramsey, Ramsey, good God. But you know, Ramsey, Jair Alexander, it's like, okay, corner, what corner are they going after? And then George Pickens. And the pushback I got on Pickens ultimately was, look, if they're going to go after George Pickens, it's at a point in Pickens' career where you have to sign him to a deal. And most teams are not calling the Pittsburgh Steelers about Pickens and offering anything of consequence because they know really ultimately what we'd be doing is we're trading for Pickens at this point just for the 2025 season. We have no idea if we can sign him to a long-term contract or if we want to sign him to a long-term contract because we haven't had him in our building. And the Steelers have had him in their building, and they've been picking up the phone on him. You know, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I was saying they've had him in the building. It sounds fun to have him in your building.
Yeah. Well, you if you pick up the phone on a player of that talent in particular for 18 months, it's a signal to other teams that, like, okay, he's probably a problem. Like, this is a problem. Like, do you want to give money to this guy long-term? Is it something where you're comfortable you know, paying him. Clearly the Steelers have not been comfortable paying him, and that telegraphs a pretty significant red flag to other teams. So I got pushback definitely from other teams. And I think I even went on Pittsburgh radio where I was like, you know, look, other teams immediately question, are the Cowboys trying to trade for George Pickens? Because at the 12th pick in the draft, I can tell you, and then they might go best player available. They've done that in recent years, and it's been very lucrative, you know, for them. But they've been very corner and wide receiver driven at the 12th pick in the draft. They really want to get a number two wide receiver. And if it's not Tech McMillan, it feels very rich for other players, whether it's Matthew Golden, whether it's Emeka Egbuka, anyone else at the wide receiver position feels very rich at 12. So it makes sense that they would go shopping for a wide receiver in the trade market. Why Jerry would make that public, or at least make public that they're trying to work on trades, is anybody's guess. But a lot of teams are like, you don't trade for Pickens at this point, unless you're giving up virtually nothing. You know, if you're giving up a fifth and you're going and getting George Pickens for a season, okay, that makes sense. But, you know, a day two pick for George Pickens, you only deal that kind of asset if you know you're ready to pay the guy. And no one, I think, across the league is ready to give George Pickens a contract in the next couple of weeks / months, which would be indicative of giving up sort of a middle round pick for him. The talent is there. I just think it's, you know, for years, the Steelers, when you've gone into the Steelers organization, come out, there's always sort of been this idea with the wide receivers that they wanted an adult in the room, and it was almost always tied to Pickens. So nobody wants to pay that guy right now. And I won't rule it out, but I would be stunned if the Cowboys gave up anything of consequence to go get George Pickens, because you just know it's sort of a one-year deal at this point. But I will add on too, when it comes to, you know, Mingo, Trey Lance, they've given up higher draft assets for guys that they've acquired in the last, you know, 2 years than maybe other teams would. So if there is a team that would give up more for Pickens at this point without having the horizon worked out, that would probably be the Cowboys.
Well, Charles, it's going to be fun. Hope you have fun today. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next week, my friend.
I just, before I go, I want to make sure that we have to get Joe threatening to call the feds, quote unquote, the feds.
The feds. Hey, man, whatever I need.
We need that as a drop. That has to be worked out. Like, we got to make sure we get that. I mean, other than that, like, what's it, the Skiatika?
Oh, yeah.
Drop, we have to get Joe threatening to call the feds on the kids in his neighborhood.
I say a lot of stupid crap, Charles. Hey, man, this is insane. This is out of hand, man. So, I mean, I'm
Super
I'm
soakers galore.
Yeah.
Calling the feds, though, is
it's a gambling ring. It's tobacco, firearm, and what are the ATF agents, man?
Exactly.
Get me out of here.
Get to Nolensville. Right.
You are a narc. Whoever said that on the text line is completely correct.
Hello, fellow kids.
Oh, boy. Right, thank you, Charles. See appreciate it. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. We'll react to what Charles had to say. Interesting stuff on the NFL draft. We'll get to coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.